Welcome to the show where we unearth new ways of looking at ever-evolving life around the world, seen from a number of different industries, cultures, and backgrounds. But there's one thing that unites everyone I speak to. They all want to do their part to make the world better in their own unique ways. It's a uniting passion. Whether they're from the commercial world, third sector, or public sector, from the global north or the global south, my name is Philippa White, and welcome to Thai Unearthed. Hello and welcome to episode 35 of Thai Unearthed. Today we're going to be talking about the power of African surf and what my good friend Nick Dutton is doing to change the story of Africa. Nick is the co-founder and CEO of Mummy Wata, which is a global African surf lifestyle brand. Prior to founding Mummy Wata in 2017, Nick had a 20-year career in advertising in South Africa and the UK, where he held executive roles at some of the world's leading agencies, specializing in global, creatively-led brands such as Jaguar, Volvo, and Snickers. And it was when Nick was working in advertising that we met. He was my boss in London when I first started out in the industry, so we go back a long time. Now, having traveled extensively around the world, he was able to identify the global opportunity for a premium African surf brand. So he moved his family to Cape Town, and with his co-founders, they launched Mummy Wata. Due to their love of Africa, design, and surfing, as well as a belief that the world needs a different lens to view and understand Africa. Like me, Nick was also born in South Africa, so what he's doing really resonates with me. We'll be talking about how Mummy Wata came about, their journey, the curveball of COVID, and where this has all taken them. Honestly, the story is incredible and super inspiring. So grab that favorite beverage or throw on those running shoes. And here's Nick. Hi, Nick.
Hey, Philippa.
It's really great to have you with me today. Where are you?
I'm in our new office in Cape Town.
Oh. Fantastic. Well, listen, I am so excited to have you on Thai Unearthed. Nick and I have known each other for a very long time. Very, very old and good friend of mine. We also both come from South Africa. So I remember you talking about Herman Zadus. Ooh, maybe I shouldn't have said that on Thai Unearthed. Hermanus is a beach place just outside of Cape Town. My uncle and aunt had a place there, and so I used to go, and Nick would.
Are they still there?
I think they still have their place. My uncle's passed away, but my aunt, I'm almost certain that she still has the place there. I think so. I haven't been to it in a while, but yeah. So anyway, yeah, we'll get into Mummy Wata in a moment, but I just would love you to bring you to life for our listeners. Tell us a little bit about you.
Oh, crikey. As Philippa says, we go back a fair while. I guess my sort of background, a bit of context to why I'm sitting in Cape Town now. I was born in South Africa, but largely grew up in England. And I went to school and university in England. But then I started an advertising career back in South Africa. So from 96 to 2001, I worked in Johannesburg. The biggest amount was for Ogilvy there. It was an amazing agency, lots of great people. But contextually, it was the end of apartheid. So 96 to 2001. So, you know, South Africa just going through just like rampant optimism, just huge growth, you know, the Rainbow Nation, a lot of amazing stuff happening. And I was very lucky to be working for a great company in Johannesburg, which is a wonderful, wild African city, learning about advertising, which is a career I'd always wanted to do. You know, before that, I'd done work experience in England in like BBH and WCRS, you know, mid-90s, God, you know, a long time ago. Anyway, so after South Africa, I then moved back to London, where I then worked in advertising for, you know, nearly another 15, 16 years, where I worked at Darcy.
Darcy. So Nick was my boss. he was my boss on what was the account? It was the government account, wasn't it?
Was it DFES, Department for Education and Skills?
No, it wasn't that one. I think it was another one. I can't remember. Anyway, so yes, he was my boss. Go on. Sorry, I cut you off.
So Darcy, where, you know, we just met some, it was a fortunate moment of lots of great, amazing, talented people came together. And, you know, the agency was solid, wasn't great, but there's lots of amazingly talented people.
So many talented people. And if we think about the people that were still, I mean, if I look at the people from our friendship group, I mean, they're all extraordinary people, all doing amazing things. And we were so lucky. Like, it was a really solid group of really good and nice and smart people.
Yeah. And, you know, lots of people now doing amazing leadership roles in agencies and different careers, but largely lots of great people. And we all sort of worked hard, partied hard, you know, and so it was a great time. And then after that, I went to Hal Henry, HHCL, which was great. It was sort of the agency was slightly past its sell-by date at that point, but there were still some good people around. And, you know, they're still doing radically different ways of working. So that was good. And then I went to Euros for a bit, and that's when I did worked on Jaguar and Volvo, and then Euros, and then I think Darcy merged with Leo Burnett, and then to Leo Burnett for a bit, then BBDO and Grey. So, you know, I sort of did a sort of tour of London and land, and then left it all in, got it, which 2016.
And that's
both combination of yesterday and a long time ago to come and start a business, surf business in Africa.
So before we get there, what is a memory that you have of me?
God, I just feel like I've got so many, but I sort of feel like there's one where seeing you at a festival that I don't know which festival it was, that neither of us thought we were going to be there. And I sort of turned around and then we were like, was it like a big chill?
Yeah, it must have been.
I think it was at a big chill.
Oh yeah, you were there with Nick. I think I was there with Kaya.
Yeah, I think that's my memory. Which is, you know, there's other worky ones, but we never had any. Fortunately, no major work dramas.
Yeah, we didn't have any work dramas.
You know, any clients firing us in a meeting together or anything exciting like that. No, but I think my main one is, you know, just a great sense of positive energy. And it's a thematic memory more than a specific one. But, so that's why it's slightly great to, you know, find us both on this years later. But very, very fortunate, you know, to be in starting our own things and doing, you know, in their own way, meaningful roles, but outside of what we were doing. But in some ways still related to it.
Yeah, absolutely. So tell our listeners, I'd love you to explain what happened. What was the catalyst for you to jump ship?
Well, I guess, a number of things conspire, and it's never, well, you know, hindsight, you can make these things sound simple. But, you know, in 2015, I came back to South Africa on holiday and I was having a conversation with an old friend of mine who owns a surf magazine. We were standing on the beach looking at lots of people surfing, and we were like, oh, you know, just conversation about brands and, well, conversation about what are we doing with our careers. And I was saying, look, I'm slightly bored of advertising, want to do something else. I was slightly bored of my job versus advertising. And he was like, oh, I'm bored of my magazine as well. I'm not sure where it's going to go. And anyway, we got into a conversation about African surf brands. We're standing on the beach, Long Beach in Combeki in Cape Town. And had this sort of the seed of an idea, oh, what about starting an African surf brand? And, you know, neither of us had been in apparel, e-commerce, you know, we had nothing to do with the industry, but we did have a major passion for Africa, the sea, the ocean, and I've just always grown up loving brands and being interested in them and what makes them work. And so, you know, being born in Africa, a love of Africa, and this thing sort of converged, oh, an African surf brand. And then, you know, the reality was, you know, I've done a 20-year career in advertising, and I just wasn't finding that challenging or exciting. I'd done some really great, exciting, big global jobs, but it felt like I was doing the same thing again and again. And I just, you know, and you've got to have fresh energy to it. And I think you've either got to own your business, and then you're in a different thing. You're running your business. It happens to be in advertising. But if you don't own an agency, then it's a different, you know, then you're working incredibly hard and, you know, you're not getting any of the value. Well, anyway, this is my perspective. And I think, you know, you get to a point where you've got to go, I just want, and I love creativity. I love ideas. I love marketing. I love the creating stuff, but it's, so I still, everything I loved about advertising, I still loved, but I was just bored of doing it in an advertising company.
So tell us about Mummy Water.
Yeah, well, the name means Mother Water, and in West Africa, sort of the mermaid figure with a serpent is called Mummy Water, and it's pidgin English, Mummy Water, Mother Water. Mm-hmm. And she is the sea spirit, and those who believe in her believe that if you go into the ocean and she takes you to be her lover and you survive, you'll come back and be better looking and more successful. So it's got this, and our thing is everybody needs a top up. But, you know, so it's got this great story about transformation and about the sea and also some wonderful African storytelling to it. You know, but children who grow up in West Africa, their parents will go, don't go near the sea, otherwise Mummy Water will get you. You know, so it's this thing. Yeah, you know, it can be a warning of, she represents like both the dangers and attraction and amazing stuff of the sea, the duality of its sort of life-giving nature and its life-taking nature. But the idea to call the brand that was, you know, I'll take one step back.
Yeah.
At the same time, when I had this conversation with my friend Andy about starting an African surf brand, I saw an African iced tea brand called Boss Iced Tea, which is really popular in South Africa. And it had an amazing design, and I love design, and it a wonderful packaging. And it's the sort of, for me, great brands will take people into a category they didn't think about being in or want to be in. You know, it's why somebody will go from a big car into a Mini because of what it says about them. And then here, loads of people drinking iced tea, and they weren't drinking it before, but the design was just amazing. And anyway, it turns out Andy knew the designer of that, and who he'd done some magazines with, and he said, look, we must chat to Piet to see if he wants to get involved. And so Andy sent Piet a message on Facebook, and Piet was living in Medellin, Colombia at the time. But he said, hey, do you want to do an African surf brand? And then Piet was like, great.
Wow. So is he the designer?
Yeah. So the boss.
Oh, my gosh, Piet. Really? Wow.
So, and he's a, you know, I've been very fortunate before this to work with a couple of amazing people, but Piet's a phenomenal, world-class, amazing, original, creative thinker and doer and strategist and stuff. So it was incredibly sort of, you know, lucky bounce, you know, chance.
So how many people are there, partners at Mummy Water?
Well, originally it was us as the three co-founders.
Yeah.
And then just after we launched, a guy called Salema Masekela, whose father was Hugh Masekela, who was a globally renowned trumpet and horn player who lived in exile during apartheid, lived in New York. And Salema was born in the States but grew up in Venice, but was big in action sports. And he, when he saw our brand film, we sort of got connected, and he was just like, you know, he's African-American, and he said, like, nobody... Yes, I've been in the surf industry 20 years, and, you know, no brand has ever spoken to me before in a way that you have in terms of, like, representation, but also Africa. And anyway, so Salema's very connected, and he's the voice of action sports for ESPN and the X Games. It's so funny, on our journey, we keep meeting people that grew up watching the X Games, and Salema's voice was the commenter, and so I was like, oh my god, I've lived with your voice. But anyway, he's got an amazing voice. And so he joined us about 6 months after. So we're the four co-founders. Okay. And then we've got a number of other shareholders. And
so let's back up just a little bit, because you touched on basically the essence of Mummy Water when you said the reason why he got on board, because you were the only surf brand that spoke to him. Maybe you can tell a little bit, I mean, you're South African, maybe just touch on where this came from and why, how you're a challenger brand. What are you challenging?
Yeah, well, I guess we're challenging, you know, the norms of the category. And surf's grown up, the surf industry's grown up with a sort of Californian, Australian brand story, because that's where a lot of surf culture did come from. And that's ultimately a sort of largely, we always say that where the opportunity for us is, you know, those brands all look exactly the same. You know, they've got the same design aesthetic and they've actually all got the same designers. And they've sort of got a California, Australia sort of surf vibe to it. And the opportunity for us came around a number of things, one of which was just very practically, you walk into a surf shop, I wouldn't buy any of that stuff. You know, talking about brands like Billabong, Quicksilver, Rip Curl, you know, it's slightly like these old tired surf brands. And there's also just no differentiation between them, even if you've got like new brands like Volcom and Hurley. But if you go into a surf shop, it all looks the same. And actually, people outside of surf don't really want to wear, you know, just those brands aren't cool. It's a really interesting thing. If you look at like what's happened in skate, you look at brands, you know, like Stussy and the projects they get involved in, like working with Dior or Supreme, working with LVMH, like skate brands or Palace, you know, skate is cool. And those brands are doing really interesting things. Whereas surf, none of those those brands live in a slight echo chamber. But part of that, from it, you know, they all look the same, manufacturing the same factories in Asia. And also none of the companies are doing any interesting things. They've all been bought out, they're owned by private equity firms. You know, it's big, they're big corporates that want to sell loads of T-shirts and watch the WSL and just live in that space. And for us, when we started this, it was around, you know, a love of Africa. All three of us were born in Africa, a love of design and also a desire to create a company that was doing good and was, you know, a lot of people talk about being purpose-led, but that for us was essential to what we wanted to do. And that was based on, as the three initial founders, a lot of the issues we've got that people have with Africa. And we wanted to challenge people's perceptions about Africa. And so our thing was, right, let's make a story. You know, people's associations with Africa are disease, crime, AIDS, corruption, war, because that's what the news cycle is. But there's so much more to it. And frankly, I think the world's hypocritical around a lot of those things. But Africa doesn't get a chance to tell that story. So we were like, well, we want to create a brand that tells an honest but story about Africa, one rooted in African surf culture, as Africa is the final frontier of surf. You know, it's got all of these surf locations that aren't developed. And it's also got its own surf culture that isn't being reflected or told in these other brands. If you wanted to be a surfer before, the idea was you have to have blonde hair, blue eyes, and be from California or Australia. And so how does that speak to a young kid from Mozambique or a black kid from a township in South Africa? And so the amazing thing about Africa is actually Africa's diversity. And so, you know, some people say, are you a black surf brand? And we said, no, we're an African surf brand. And we want to represent that breadth of diversity. And our brand's also got like almost proportional representation, you know, as we'll touch on our book in a bit. But, you know, it's largely black because, you know, Mandela talks about the Rainbow Nation. It was a rainbow. It's a rainbow largely with blacks and browns, but there are whites and pinks and other colors within it. So for us, it was about creating a brand that captured the diversity of African surf culture. And all the exciting parts of it. But I guess one of the things that developed, when we started it, we just wanted to create an African surf brand. The initial conversations were 2015 and then into 2016. You know, we wanted to challenge perceptions, but, you know, you started with three white African founders. We didn't have a black perspective within that. So what happened when Salema joined? He said, look, and what he brought more into our conversations was, he goes, I want you to understand why what you're doing is meaningful and why it meant a lot to him. You know, we approach this just with love and positive energy, but not really understanding in a deep way or a first-hand way what it meant to be black and a surfer or brown and a surfer and what, you know, representation meant. So that's actually been a journey for us as well as we've navigated, you know, when you're building a brand, it's got so much to it. And especially when you're starting one, you're just chipping away at stuff and working out fucking what it's going to mean and what how it should express itself. And then, you know, and then we've got really exciting, meaty issues around diversity. And, you know, for us, for questions, what does it mean to be a white African doing this? You know, how when you're doing, you know, how do you make sure that this whole thing is balanced in an equitable way that people go, right, what you're doing is good and representative and navigate
and authentic,
that,
right?
And authentic. But we've just said, right, well, there are real issues in the world. But when it comes to things like, let's not skate around it, let's just sort of go into it. And part of it is a lot of people don't want to discuss these things, but we're like, actually, well, let's get into it and work out what it means and have an open conversation around some of the issues, or not all of the issues, and work out how to sort of, you know, move forward in it.
So the last time we met each other in person was just before COVID hit. It was in January, I think, of 2020. Yes, it would have been January of 2020 when we were in Covent Garden and you were about to go to Milan for a fashion show. What was that?
We'd been approached by Moncler to do a collab, and I was going, what was I doing? I was going to see Moncler and do something else. I can't remember what else it was. But
yeah,
it was,
I can't remember either. But anyway, it was except you did have a couple of meetings and you had your bag of shirts, and I got this as a gift when we met, which is lovely. And I remember the conversation, just catching up on life, and you were feeling, you know, you knew you were onto something, but you were feeling a little bit unsure about things. It sort of felt like a bit of a funny time. Obviously, this was just before COVID, so this wasn't even a thing really that we were talking about. It was more just the evolution of the brand. And I remember you were just feeling unsure. And then COVID hit. And I remember thinking of you actually as I was struggling, and it was hugely challenging for Ty. But I did think of you quite a bit, actually, just thinking, oh my God, I wonder how Nick is doing, because I knew that things were really, you know, a bit at a funny moment. Talk to us about what happened.
Yeah, well, I guess at that time, and this is anybody that's done a startup, it's an absolute journey. You know, you hear of these amazing startups and they're out there. The brands that suddenly, you know, within three years, they're suddenly doing hundreds of million, you know, worth billions, etc. You know, that hasn't been our journey. We went into an industry we knew nothing about, but none of us had been in clothing, e-commerce, manufacturing, export. And it's one of those ones where, would you have done it if you knew? Maybe not, but then we wouldn't have achieved. But at that point, you know, we had struggled, and one of our challenges has been being based out of Africa and trying to get investors and corporate structure. So we were at that point looking at, you know, a bit about how do we structure this, you know, what direction is it going to go in, and how do we get investors on board. So we had, you know, we had lots of heat and energy around what we're doing, but, you know, you need capital to grow. And we hadn't got that locked in yet. And we had a few things looming, but, you know, you learn it's never on until it's on, or it's never in the bank until it's in the bank. So that was where we were at. And I think, you know, you go in energy cycles as well around it. And so I think that we were looking at, you know, what could happen. But then, and then COVID hit, and, you know, the joy of, not joy, but, you know, with a whole load of hindsight now, it's probably the best thing that ever happened to us.
So talk to us about what, I mean, it's huge. I don't even know where you're going to start, but.
Well, I guess I'll start that for the first month, we all were like, well, that's the end of that. You know, we were for all the, you know, well, when nobody really knew what shape COVID was going to be and what was going to happen, but it felt like this apocalypse. And also South Africa went into immediate hard lockdown.
It was hardcore.
Which was like, you couldn't leave your house and stuff. It's like day after tomorrow. So a bit like, well, you know, what's going to happen here? And then after a month when the dust hadn't settled, but we were like, okay, at least our view as founders was like, let's just, there's energy around what we're doing. We haven't really managed to get to like export in a scale or the core of the business. So we said to our investors, look, will you just help us keep the lights on for 6 months? And then we had all these great orders going out the door, 85% of them canceled in 3 days. And so we sort of had stock, no money, and that money was going to keep us going for another 6 months. And suddenly we had our sales cancelled, no cash flow, no money. And so we said to our investors, look, will you help us keep the lights on for 6 months? And we just said, look, we're absolutely committed to leaving with more momentum than we've got now. Like, we've all, you know, we've done this for like three and a bit years. You know, we've got amazing media and people are like excited. But, and so they all said, okay, all chipped in a bit. And then we got a really reduced our already lean overheads further. And then we had this idea, we'd always spoken about doing a book. And so we said, look, let's do the book. But we said, we've got no money. How are we gonna do this? So the idea we had was to do the book idea was to create a coffee table book on African surf culture. And we'd done a Kickstarter the year before where we'd raised money to build a clubhouse for Waves for Change, which is a surf therapy organization in Harper, Liberia. And we'd done this thing where you've got to buy a range of clothing through Kickstarter and then all the money built this thing in Liberia. So we'd had the experience of Kickstarter. So we said, let's do a coffee table book on African surf culture. And we said, we'd do it on Kickstarter. And we said, we've got a budget of $2,000 to do the marketing. We said, look, the minimum we need to raise to make the book was £30,000. And we did the Kickstarter and we raised like £90,000. So it was, so suddenly we then had to make a book. And I think one of the, you know, and we had 4 months to do it. So we went from getting the money, in fact, 4 months in total. So this was like July, and we said, we've got to ship it in November. And we had I sort of define it now, so we had the powerful constraints of no time, no money, and we couldn't travel.
Yeah.
And we were like, well, how do we get like photographers? But those constraints totally shaped the book, and we ended up getting like 60 contributors from around the continent, photographers, writers, and it created this sense of, well, just this diversity in creative content, storytelling, different flavors, different types of photography. And it also, in this mad time of COVID, first 6 months, you know, it gave us a real sense of purpose.
Yeah.
As a team on it. And then Piet is an amazing designer, and by the time it came out, you know, so we printed 2,000 copies, we'd already got a global publishing deal with Penguin Random House, who we sent a proof to. And
it's beautiful, and, you know, and, by the way. You can get it on Amazon, can you?
It's on Amazon.
Yeah. Mamiwata.
Yeah, if you do Mamiwata Afro Surf, it comes up. And, you know, and it just, that created a pocket of air for us to stabilize ourselves. We then started selling off the stock we had just at low levels. So any revenue that came in, you know, but we're still totally, business is bootstrapping in terms of super lean. And that sort of kept going. And then while that happened, with this restructure that we've been wanting to do to set up a holding company in the UK, this investment thing came through. So suddenly we had the right structure to get investors on board, and the book just went on fire. We were in like The Guardian, Hypebeast, Dazed, you know, just dream PR. And it just gave us, it just brought so much light and attention to the brand and interest in it. And so it meant we had a really good story when we finally said, right, let's go to investors. And we went to Crowdcube. You know, we'd done some really cool stuff and really interesting people involved and amazing media. And then the other thing that happened also, obviously, during that year of lockdown was Black Lives Matter.
Yes. So
a whole thing around people going, well, representation, diversity. Suddenly also you then got an African surf brand. Yeah. And it just sort of just
the
made...
The world needs,
you know,
it. It just makes sense globally, right? I mean, the world needs it.
And it's all of these things, none of it had happened before. So suddenly we've got the cultural context of the brand and where we're living in the world shifted. We had the book. And then so suddenly, and then we did crowdfunding at the start, well, in like May of this year, and blew that out of the water. So suddenly we've now got funds, my sort of analogy is we've got a rucksack full of supplies, a map, and we know where we can see the light, you know, the light through the trees, and we know where we're going. You know, we're still not there yet. We're definitely swimming with the tide now, and we've got so many amazing things in the pipeline.
Amazing.
And
necessity is the mother of invention, right? I talk about that so much with Ty, and I just feel it's just so true. And I remember actually in January, that was when you told me about the obstacle is the way. I just think it's so funny. You just completely showed that that is actually the case, isn't it?
It is it. And if I look at, you know, if I, the thing is that Gary, I think Gary Player, I think he's a South African, who's the golfer, said like the more I practice, the luckier we get. It's, you know, you can plan for some amazing things and some of them, but our big thing has been more some amazing, like, lucky bounces of things that have happened. And, like, you know, our biggest investor now is this American guy that had come to our shop in South Africa.
Yes.
And fallen in love with it, the brand. He's a lovely guy, and he's like, his view is like, he said it's a great thing to us. He goes, "You think you need America?" He goes, "I think America needs
Africa." America needs you. I couldn't agree more. That's great. That's exactly the kind of person that needs to be involved, because you're just going to attract so many more people that see that. Oh, that's just really great. Tell us, you know, what have been some of the biggest surprises since you started, good and bad?
I think the biggest surprises, it's been a lot, and anybody will tell you, you know, when you start with your sort of entrepreneurial idea, you get what I call sort of entrepreneurial, like, reality distortion glasses. Like, you're like, hey, you know, like the first three boxes of stock we made, we never sold any of it. Like, yeah, I had this chart. I'll never forget having this chart and Andy's wife going, "Are you going to sell that?" And I'm like, well, we launched this month. We sell 20%, 30%, and then another 50%. And then she's like, well, that's quite ambitious. And you're so caught up in your excitement for why the world needs whatever your idea is. And so I sort of say, you know, people like love our brand, and it's great, and I love it as well. But the bit you see, it really is the iceberg on the top. Underneath that is a vast amount of failure, learnings, mistakes, missteps. And so I don't know, of the learnings, just how long certainly it can take, and how hard that is. And the amount of energy and stuff you need, and how much you're willing to risk for that. I've read Elon Musk's biography, or Musk's really good, but he's got a line in that that resonated with me, and he just said, and he's just amazing, but he had this line, and he just said, I knew I was prepared to go and live with my mum again, with my kids and my wife, to make this happen. And, you know, it hasn't been that far for us, but you get into those, you get into those situations, yeah. And you've got to just have a bit of the appetite for that sort of level of risk. My wife is, you know, I didn't mention her as a co-founder, but she's been essential to this.
Absolutely. You know, Tilly, a huge shout out to you. I know you're going to be listening to it. I love Tilly. I worked with her.
You know, she got involved. So, But the highs of it are better than I thought. And I guess the highs of it better than I thought, and the lows are worse. But I feel it's probably been the most challenging 4 or 5 years of my life, but the most rewarding. And yeah, and so, you know, for me, the risk was more in not doing it than in doing it. Like I always thought.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, because you get to a point when you're discussing something like this, and you either then go, right, we're going to do it, or aren't we? And you, at some point, you've got to step off the ledge. And just, I remember that moment, I was just like, oh, if I don't do it, I don't think I'll ever, you know, what would need to happen for me to do it? And I suddenly, you know, I've got great people, it's something that I love, loads of stuff we don't know, and, you know, life's meant to be an adventure.
Is there a story that stands out?
I guess, I don't know. When you get moments like when our film came out or the book came out and people go, shit, well, that's really what you're doing. It's pretty amazing and I love it. And your brand means a lot. You know, we've had people email us and go, I just wanted to let you know why your brand's really important to me. And that's really nice. And when we do, you know, we work with these surf therapy organizations that are doing unbelievably amazing and really effective work, and anything we can do to support them, and how much those guys appreciate and benefit from where, in our own way, we're able to help them.
Where do you see Mummy Water in 10 years?
I see us in 10 years. Well, I see us in a few places around the world. You know, on really dark days when I've been having to motivate myself, I've always got this thing, imagine opening a store in Japan. I don't know. I see us being a really big, impactful global brand. You know, we've got ideas of opening some African surf lodges. So hopefully I'll be spending some time in one of those.
Yeah, right. God, there's so much.
So you can see how it folds out. But an ambition for me is, you know, when people represent or talk about, you know, like the Apples, the Nikes, etc., that we want our brand in that space to be more of a reference point. Well, I'd love it to be in conversations with an intersection of like a Nike and Patagonia, where people reference us from being like a purpose-led business in terms of, right, look at what they're doing. You know, we've given all, for example, with the book, all the profits and the rights have gone to Waves for Change and Surfers, not Street Children. So we look at like, what can we be doing? We talk about being a creative force for good to deliver for those organizations. And, you know, as we grow, we've got to think about, right, who do we employ in Africa? And, you know, can we employ some people that have come up through those organizations? So that's something that gets is really, really, really exciting. So I'd like to be a reference for, well, look at this business that's, you know, it isn't an old business that's had to sort of bolt on some purpose. It's we've grown up with it and how that manifests itself. And then from a creative perspective, we want people to have a reference us as a sort of creative, but also like quality brand. And that over time, I've got a slight anecdote, which is relating to our book and some a connection of a connection. Bizarrely, ended up having a conversation with Bill Gates about our book. It's a long story, but that's the short bit. And he said, "Hey, I've got this book, this African surf brand, and this book." And Bill Gates' thing was, he goes, "The thing Africa needs is African brands," because he goes, "You know, people's perception of America has been informed by trillions of dollars of marketing, of brands that represent family, hope, Disney, McDonald's, friendship." All of these attributes that we associate with America, if you strip that off and then your perception of America was based on its diplomacy or domestic policies, you go, oh, that's a bit of a shit place. But actually, so he's like, the world needs African brands to start getting the broader perception and just not the news cycle perception. So for me, and there's and you'll see in the book, one of the surfers from Ghana, his opening line in his profile is, he goes, "I want people to understand that Africa is a great place, not just a place with poor people and disease." And he goes, "I want to do that through surfing." And so in 10 years' time, in our own minuscule way, can we help reframe people's perceptions of Africa? That would be great. That for me. But then also, that hopefully, you know, because starting brands is really difficult, but hopefully there will be other amazing African brands coming out, and that actually the landscape, when people talk about brands in the category, won't just be the known Western brands. There'll be a mix of other brands in there, and Mami Wat will be one of those.
Yeah, you, because we're coming to the end of the podcast, but I do want to just talk very quickly about Waves for Change, because I know that they're an important part of your work. And I'm just keen to understand, and for our listeners to understand, what's the relationship? How does that work? What's the collaboration there?
Yeah, so when we first started, Andy had a connection with Tim, who's the guy who started Waves for Change. And Waves for Change is a surf therapy organization based out of Cape Town. And they were, have you heard of the Laureus or Laureus Sports Awards? They'd won the global award for most effective like sports development program. But they put 1,600 children a year through a surf therapy program. But that surf therapy program has been developed by sites and some psychologists, and it is really, really effective, taking children that grow up in really traumatic environments and give them a sense of belonging, but also social skills to deal with stuff. You know, their stats are like an average Western child will experience one or two traumatic incidents in their lives before they're 18, you know, like the death of a parent, seeing a really gnarly accident, that sort of thing. These kids see on average one a month. Like I've been somewhere and the guy's like, "Oh yeah, we saw somebody get shot this morning." Yeah. You know, and so they're fucking living in incredibly traumatic environments. But this group, like once a week, and they go and they surf for a couple of hours. And the program is just phenomenal. And so we're involved with them. You know, we help them. We do uniforms for the coaches We've raised money in a number of different ways, but we built the clubhouse for them in Harper, Liberia. And they've got a program that's going to grow through Africa, and we're supporting that. So the funds from the book are going to a thing called the Wave Alliance, which helps them set up these programs around the continent. But it also goes to another one called Surfers Not Street Children, who are an organization in Durban who are also surf therapy, slightly different model.
Listen, what haven't I asked you that you'd like to tell our listeners? Because we have come to the end.
For our website, a discount, a listener discount. I don't know. I think we've touched on it. But please, you know, if this has been interesting, either just go and check us out, follow us on Instagram, or if you want a made in Africa with African cotton product, give it a go. But I think we've.
Where can people? If I live anywhere in the world, can I buy your?
So we've got a website, and we've got a website that does UK and Europe and keeps stock there. And then we've got the big thing for us is launching into America at the end of September. So we've set up a warehouse, a website, you know, we're shipping to like Nordstrom and Saks. And
all from the comfort of your new office in Cape Town, because you haven't traveled throughout any of this. It's extraordinary, isn't it? It's extraordinary.
It is extraordinary. Yeah,
I hear being based in Brazil. We'll I know the struggle is real.
Extraordinary, extraordinary. The struggle is real.
Nick, it has been so good to connect with you. Thank you for taking the time, because I know obviously launching your U.S. store in a few weeks, life is busy, and I know life is busy. So thank you for taking the time to chat.
I think what you're doing is amazing. So super happy to chat.
Amazing. Listen, thank you, and until next time.
Cool. Thank you.
Hey everyone, this is Philippa again. I hope you enjoyed listening. Now this is your chance to get involved with TIE. If you work in the commercial world, whatever your profession, your position, or your experience, then TIE could be for you. You may have been in business for decades, but have always felt there's another way. Or you may just have a few years experience, but want to do more. Equally, if you want to create game-changing employees and see your company impact the world, we've got you covered. TIE has never been more necessary than right now, and you can be a part of it. Reach out to me at philippa@theinternationalexchange.co.uk and I can tell you more, or join the TIE Accelerator info session for more information. apply.tieaccelerator.com. Better leaders, better companies, better world. I'm your host, Philippa White. This podcast has been co-produced by Berna Vieira and me, music by Berna Vieira, and artwork by Kelps Fahais. I hope we'll meet again soon.